Tron here, we're with you in the morning, and as you know, it's that time of year where kids love to hear stories. And why? Well, because it's Halloween. And I have this video cassette that I watched over the weekend. It is a very interesting performance by a gentleman. His name is Travis Edward Pike, and he's on the phone. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning, Tron. How are you?
I'm quite well. I was just commenting to you and someone else earlier that I wondered how you remembered this entire story. By the way, you wrote the story, but the way you present it on the video, it's just amazing.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, yes, it's very long, and you must memorize it.
Boy.
Because it's a rhyme.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, you can't make mistakes. That
no.
part's true.
There's an audience.
There's an audience, right?
And they're taping it.
And it's a one-night stand.
Yeah, exactly. And we're talking about a story called The Grumpus.
Now, but in answer to your question, the rhyme is also a wonderful device for remembering.
It is.
Because, you know, you say, well, what comes next? If you know the story, and I do, I remember someone saying to me, well, you're the only one who can do it because you wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
As if that means I know how it goes. I said, listen, I know it's true. I know all the words. It's the order they go in that worries me.
Yeah, just getting those all lined up.
Yeah.
Well, now, how did you get to, first of all, tell everybody what a grumpus is.
Well, that's what the king said. I had thought, said the king, that the grumpus was a mythical monster of old. I'm afraid, sire, it's not. It were hack to be thought. Indeed, if the truth be told, a grumpus is not like a dragon. Rather more like a large, surly cat with tremendous paws and gigantic claws and jaws that can crush armor flat. They've wide yellow eyes that watch every move. They live mostly in rocky terrain. It seems that meat is all they eat. They sneeze when confronted with grain. They inhabit the coast for the most part. They're most carefully avoided by men. According to fable, the beasts are unstable. Worse, when defending a den, tawny gold is their normal coloring. But they turn out to stripes when they're crazed, and then even a knight might resort to flight. For they'll fight, sire, and you'd be amazed. Just imagine a mad 10-foot tabby. That's a grumpus.
That is so incredible. Your voices are just excellent. We're talking with Travis Edward Pike. He is the creator and the bard of the fabulous production, The Grumpus. And we have talked about who it's for and up, usually. Certainly for parents should watch it, too, because it's very interesting. You can understand it, okay? And it's, you know what? It's brand new. This isn't some old book found in some old cellar. This guy wrote this thing, right, Travis?
That's right.
When did you write this?
I originally wrote it in 1968.
Really?
To amuse my own daughter. And then, of course, as she grew older and older, and she wanted it fixed up better and better. It got bigger and bigger.
That is really neat. Now you and I talked before on the air, of course, about some of the folks you've worked for, and it turns out that you worked with a gentleman by the name of Peter Anderson who worked on the movie Tron.
That's right.
Now, how did that work out? He also worked on your production.
Yes, he did. He was great. Peter Anderson is one of the top cinematographers for special effects and optical effects in the whole world.
Yes.
And he travels all around the world doing a lot of this big IMAX stuff and all that.
You bet.
That's Peter. If anyone went to the Michael Jackson thing at Disneyland a few years back, that again was Peter, the 3D.
Oh,
so he's been a pioneer. Well, when I met him, mm-hmm. I was working on a little thing for Disney, which was called Betsy and Thumper. They were bringing out Bambi again.
Sure.
And I needed some expert advice. So they said, oh, you got to talk to Peter Anderson. So I went and I met him. And we talked walking through the halls at Disney because he was working on Tron. And they were using computers to do animation for really the first time for anything of this scale.
That's right.
And they were just having more problems than you could imagine.
Is that right?
Well, they were inventing it as they went along.
Yeah, it was all brand new to them.
Yeah, and it was great. But, yes, I met him on Tron. Well, we became fast friends because he loved my stories and my writings. And when I was over in England getting ready to do Grumpus, I couldn't be in four places at once.
No.
It was physically impossible. And I really needed somebody that I could absolutely count on. They have great cinematographers and everything in England. But I needed somebody who knew me,
right,
knew the way I performed, because no time to train anybody.
That's right.
You know, there were no rehearsals to this. That's another thing.
Oh, really?
I had no rehearsal.
Oh, wow.
So see, we didn't do it. It's
you know,
over. That's,
the first thing that occurred to me when it came on. I thought, okay, in the beginning when the children are dancing, and I thought, well, I wonder if they rehearsed that night or the day before or the week before, and you say none.
Well, the kids and I,
right,
we were rehearsing what they did,
right,
up in a little church up in Coventry.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, then comes the night at Blenheim Palace. And
right.
It's, here we go, folks.
And you were on your own. I mean,
I didn't get even a walkthrough.
Oh, wow.
So the thing is, here I needed somebody I could rely on. I called Peter in America from England.
Uh-huh.
And I said, Peter, what are you doing? He says, I'm working on Godzilla.
Oh, no, really?
I said, No, you can't be working on Godzilla. I need you. You know?
I have another monster for you to work on.
Right. So he said, well, I explained the situation, and he really wanted to be with me. So he said, let me call you back in an hour. Well, I want to tell you, I didn't get up from the phone. I sat by the phone in the hotel room.
Locked the door.
And about 45 minutes later, I got a call, and he said, have a ticket waiting for me on the airport. I'm on my way. Well, what he had done is he went down to the special effects zone, because that's all he was doing. He wasn't shooting Godzilla.
Sure.
He was doing, you know, little bits of the special effects for it.
Yeah.
So he went down into the shop where they were creating all these things, and he looked around, and he said, you're not ready for me yet, because he's the guy who's going to photograph it.
Uh-huh.
And he said, all right, we're not going to bring in all the lights and everything until you do. And he gave them like a 3-week assignment to get everything ready. So that meant he had the 3 weeks free to get over and help me.
Oh, that is a friend. That's a true friend.
It was wonderful.
That is so neat. And then, of course, now this production, once again, where was it taped at?
Well, we shot it at Blenheim Palace, and that's the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill. It's one of the most gloriously beautiful palaces. I've heard people call it a castle. It's not a castle. It's a palace.
Uh-huh.
And it's in the heart of England, and it's just considered, it is now registered as one of the world heritage sites.
Oh, wow.
So I think there's it and the Taj Mahal and maybe the pyramids, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's incredible. One of the eight wonders.
Yeah, it really is. It's fabulous. And we had the Queen's lifeguard there. Now, look, I know it was Halloween, and you say nobody was going swimming, but that's not who the Queen's lifeguard is. That's what I'm over there, and I'm trying to get this thing put together. And I said, well, you want the Queen's lifeguard? And I said, it's going to be too cold for anybody to be going in the lake. I don't need anybody's lifeguard.
And then they explained it to you.
That's right. The Queen's lifeguard, and we've all seen them. I just didn't know who they were.
Right.
The guys on the horses with the breastplates and the plumed helmets and all. I said, oh, yeah, we got to have them.
Oh, my.
They really dress it up nice.
Oh, that is incredible.
The Queen's lifeguard trumpeters came and heralded all my arriving guests. What a treat for them. And I really wanted to see them, but you know how it is.
Yes.
I was out in the tent.
You bet. That's part of the production.
That's right.
So, this was filmed, taped, if you will. In what year? This was just like a year or two ago.
It was in 1997 on the 1st of November.
Oh, okay.
And then it took me a whole year to get the VAT back so I could finish the post-production.
Isn't that the way it works? You will be captivated, by the way, by Travis's performance. He will pull you into the story. It's just amazing. And I sit here and think, you said you wrote this thing in 1968. What a great deal. You wrote it for your daughter. That is so neat. I mean, you did that, and she basically had a hand in the production, didn't she?
She did. She was the other one who had to come over and help rescue me when all of a sudden things were getting out of control. Again, I couldn't be everywhere at once. She actually quit her job,
Wow. Got
on a plane, flew to England, took over as production coordinator, hired virtually the entire British crew for me while I was up there in Coventry with those little kids freezing in that cold.
You bet.
Beach, you know? And so Peter went to Blenheim Palace to supervise the building of the set and the putting up the lights and all this kind of thing, mm-hmm. putting up the actual marquee in which it was done. It was the biggest one they'd ever erected. So it actually was almost the size of the south facade of the palace. What a ridiculous thing, but what a great thing.
Oh, that is tremendous.
And
you know,
she came over and did that, and then when she finished, She came that night to the show dressed in stage black with a little pin light, little, what do you, flashlight.
Sure.
And she sat there following in the script. And if I messed up too badly, she was going to stop the show, tell me take three steps backwards and do this. Well, in fact, there were several times when things like that happened. They were not usually because I forgot the story.
Right.
They were because suddenly a bunch of guys in Oxford decided to celebrate Guy Fawkes Day a little bit early because it was the weekend.
Ah.
Skyrockets going off outside.
Oh, my goodness.
We had some sound and technical problems that, of course, any show could happen.
Oh, sure. It's live.
Yeah, if you've had no rehearsal.
Believe me, I know exactly what you're talking about. But then there's the music, the magic of edit.
Yes. And that was the most magical thing of all, because the deal was there was no tomorrow. Tomorrow they struck the set and the tent came down.
Yes.
You know? So the answer was you had to say, all right, well, where was the last time I was doing something right? And you back up to there, and you walk through maybe three or four quatrains that you've already done perfectly well in order to give yourself somewhere along that way where you can get a match cut. And we did it. The thing looks flawless.
It does.
It?
Oh, it is. It's seamless.
Yeah.
We're talking to Travis. Travis, I don't know why it's so hard for me to say the word Travis. Travis, with a name like Tron, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Travis Edward Pike is the gentleman on the phone right now. We're talking about his production that is available now. It's called Grumpus. And remember, everybody, a Grumpus is not like a dragon. It's rather more like a large, surly cat with tremendous paws and gigantic claws and jaws that can crush armor flat, which brings me to thought of the lifeguard for the Queen. I appreciate your time, and I want to know when you get the word on the awards. We want to talk about that in the next round.
Excellent.
So let me know when that comes out. You've got my numbers. I've got yours. Let's do it.
Okay, great, Tron. Thank
Travis
you very
Edward
much.
Pike, everybody. Thank you, sir. You are indeed a production master.
Thank you.
Thank you.